Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today. The only way I can sum it up is it's raining men. We got some guys on the show that are going to share their incredible journeys, their story, their business, what they're up to. And they always tell me you can't get the men on the show because the men don't talk, but they're talking to us today. So I'm going to invite you to do what I always
invite
you to
be on another episode.
That is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone in your network, someone in your neighborhood who needs this information, especially when we get to the part when we let them know that you just have to shut up and grind. Usually we like to sell it to them a little softer, but today we're hitting hard and we're hitting home. So make sure you go ahead and share the show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So I want to go ahead and introduce our very first guest, someone who over the last year has been an incredible friend. I got to meet him, got to get to know him. I learned a lot from this young man, and we're celebrating his birthday today. So it's going to be a great show. Mr. Salim Amir Bey is a constitutionalist. He was born in Virginia. He placed top five in the USA in national culinary competition, and he felt ashamed when he started looking at America's diet. He became active in making people aware about foods we eat and how they affect us. Good morning. Happy birthday, Salim. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Why are you all calm today, Salim?
I'm saving the energy up for later today.
Okay, well, I need a little bit of energy today, too. You got to give me something.
I can do that. I got you. I'm excited, but I'm telling you, I got to be in that reserve mode because when I let loose, you know how Aries are.
Yeah,
turn that hose on.
Let loose.
Yeah, when I turn that hose on, it's going to be on. I can't turn it on right now.
But. For the people who do not know you, Sully, tell us who you are, what you do, what you're passionate about, and I'm going to sneak this one in. Tell us about being a constitutionalist.
Ooh, nice. Well, I was born in Virginia. I've been up and down the East Coast. I studied culinary arts at Le Cordon Bleu. Before I did that, I trained under a master chef, and I went into competitions. And just to impress a girl that I had a crush on in high school at the time, I said that I could do it. But I didn't know what myself was. I didn't know. I just went in there and I just did it. So I guess I was practicing something that Robert is doing right now where I had to just shut up and grind because I couldn't tell her that I didn't know how to do this. But it worked out well and it placed me on a journey in culinary arts where I got to learn from multiple and facets of people and facets of different cuisines and different ideas. But I started seeing how the diet was plaguing us. The obesity rates were going up, the gastrointestinal diseases were going up, diabetes was spiking, and I felt that I needed to learn more about it. So when I went to culinary school, I changed my major to the restaurant management side where I got to learn nutrition, law, and those things. And it just perked my interest that I wrote my business plan for my nonprofit while I was in school so I could do it the correct way, learning the very necessities that I needed to do. But after doing so, I wanted to do more music, which you can catch us on Real Bandcamp under J-Dot and our beautiful logo that is behind us that was designed by my brother, Greg Thornton, which did an amazing job on that. But I just felt like I could do more. So I met a constitutional attorney in 2013, and we're debating about Run DMC. And she liked the way that I presented my arguments in hip hop. So I recognized at that time that I had an opportunity in something that I'm very passionate about with the law. And I'm not a self-proclaimed constitutionalist, it's just I abide by the Constitution. Once I learned the depths of it, the markings of it, what the nation is all about, I started doing some controversial things. I started changing myself, actually. I knew what status was. I knew what the law actually said, and I wanted to give that to my people because I felt like that we are behind in a lot of ways, and we have been shamed in a lot of ways. So, and to answer your question, being a constitutionalist is rough. So it's very rough because you have people that have these conceived notions of what it says in the Constitution, whether it's the literal print or the US Code, and it's not in there, or it doesn't mean what they say or what their argument is presenting. So it's very hard, but there's a lot of people that come and ask me questions. I'm back in the kitchen at a job now where I enjoy being around those people. And I've had several conversations there where it's just amazing. So it's bittersweet being a constitutionalist because you hurt a lot of feelings. So that's me.
Well, we're going to find out more about you. I know there's more than that because you definitely know the Constitution. You've been on several shows and taught me a lot about it. But I also want to talk more about the diet and the health of people around the world, not just America. But I'm going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Erwin Wills. After finishing university in 1996 as a Master of Science in Electrical Engineering, Erwin worked in the corporate world for 20 years because that is what he was told to do. Do your best at school, get a title, and get a job. That's the safe, responsible way to live life. He worked at several companies in various roles, always looking for ways to add value. His common thread was process optimization, and each step he took was toward this goal. See how it works, optimize the process, and move on. Good morning, Erwin. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thanks for having me on the show. And that was just all in the past right now, because I'm doing totally different things right now.
What are you doing right now?
Yeah. Well, like you said, I was always looking for adding value. And in 2014, I thought to myself, you know, you can optimize a process and have all the graphs and figures to support that optimization. But if the people that are using the process don't change, the process itself won't change. So how can I get those people to change as well? I thought about doing a training in NLP, but I didn't have much information about it. So I searched on the internet. Via NLP, I came to hypnotherapy. And long story short, I started to doing a hypnotherapy training. And after the first weekend of training, I found my purpose. I found my passion, you know, because I like helping people, but in a coaching way. My work is in a challenge, and every client is unique. Every person is unique. So every new client is a new challenge for me. And I'm still optimizing processes, but very complex ones, those of the internal human being. So after that first weekend, back in 2015, I thought to myself, you know, this is me. I have to do this someday for a living. And that someday in my mind was like 5 to 10 years, not realizing when I got on the train that I would be fully self-employed in 2017. So I worked the first 2 years as a hypnotherapist, helping people overcome all kinds of mental challenges. And I saw a lot of unused potential with my clients. You know, we're keeping ourselves small, we're limiting ourselves without realizing it. And I love to put people in the full potential. So that's why I changed my focus towards coaching. And now I'm a mindset coach and business strategist. And I currently focus on technical experts to boost the business and themselves, transforming them into the person that will achieve the goals and beyond.
Wow, very interesting. Where are you located?
I'm located in the Netherlands.
What time is it?
It just was 5 p.m. in the afternoon over here.
Okay, so you've been up for a while. It's early here in America. Now, we do have a question. Someone in the audience would like to know, and this is the question they're asking, does hypnotherapy really work?
It does, except you must understand that people want to change, but not to be changed. Mm. So some people say, I can't be hypnotized, it doesn't work. But if you truly want to change, then it will work because it's your subconscious that actually does the work.
Okay, well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But when we talk about change, let's go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. UB. UB is an advocate for people's safety, and happiness. He thrives in helping people overcome internal obstacles to be better humans to themselves and others. As an advocate, he helps companies attract, hire, and develop more inclusive and diverse talent. He speaks about the future of work and building inclusive companies through his work as co-founder and CEO of Breaking the Bias. Good morning, UB. How are you?
Good morning. Doing really well. It's good to see everybody. Thank you.
You're welcome. I love the background behind you.
I'm very lucky. Yeah, we're in Colorado, up in Telluride right now. And I'm in a bowl, basically. Telluride's kind of in a bowl, but in the mountains. And it's just, you're all constantly surrounded by beauty. So it's nice for the mental health, you know?
Yes, but also the mental health, but you seem to work and help the mental health of other people, helping them find happiness. Tell us about that journey, how you started.
Yeah, and we, it's really about helping people just understand that we all have bias, right? It kind of starts with that understanding, that awareness that we all have bias and we all have empathy. And, you know, so a lot of the work, a lot of the discussions and the trainings that we have with employees is just to help everybody understand that that's the truth. And just because you have bias doesn't make you a bad person. That's how we learn. You know, bias is a result of learning. And it's not a good or bad thing. It becomes a bad thing or a negative thing when we start to behave towards people in a different way because of our biases. It's just, how can we help people be better? We just actually launched a technology company called InterviewIA based on all this work we've done with talent strategy in the last 5 years and the bias training to help interviewers be better, right? Like none of us were ever taught how to interview people. And so it just becomes who am I most comfortable with? Who had the best handshake? Did we go to the same school, right? And do they look like me? And so what we want to do is, using technology, help interviewers just be better interviewers so that every candidate who comes through their process has an equal opportunity at whatever the job is. It doesn't matter what their name is. It doesn't matter what their skin color is, where they went to school. None of that matters. It really matters is, do they have the ability to do this job? And are they going to be here for a while? Are they going to grow with us as a company? Are they going to help us grow?
That's very interesting that you say that, because one of the things you led with is, it doesn't matter what their name is. And studies have shown that if just through testing it, if you take two different people with the exact same resume, just make it up, exact same resume, yep, and one person has a more John Smith American name, and then the other person has a different type of name, even with the same exact resume, the person with, you know, the John Smith is more likely to get the job than the other person. Mm-hmm. And when I've seen it, I tell people, believe me, I understand, because with a name like Sharifa, you know, I was born and raised, mm-hmm, in Washington, D.C., you know, of all places.
Right. Well,
I was born in Washington, D.C., so, you know, I'm as American as they come. But when people see my name, they are speaking on the phone, they say, are you in India? No, I'm not in India. I'm right here right. in California. I've never been to India. No offense to India. Love to go to India. Or they were saying, are you in Saudi Arabia? No. I'm not, I'm here. So I understand what you mean about those biases when people look at information, but how does technology how do you implement the technology to make a difference?
So the technology is there to assist. And so we built a platform to help the interview. So it starts with kind of, first of all, let's structure the interview in the right way, right? So that we are able to ask the right questions and we're able to listen to we're listening for what we know we need to hear in order for someone to be a right fit for the role. And we also should define and understand what we don't want to hear. Like if we hear these negative indicators, then this person isn't right for this role. So it starts with structuring the interview process. You know, right now, I think most companies and most hiring managers, they usually go out to Google to find the 20 best interview questions to ask, and that's what they go into every interview with. But they're not measuring that. They're not understanding how those questions really get us to understand if somebody's going to be good for a role. They're just, you know, we're basically running candidates through a gauntlet, and that's what it's been like for hundreds of years. But what's interesting is we make our decision based on one thing, and it's like, it's the name. Or, you know, I've had people say, well, I knew immediately at the first handshake if I was going to hire this person or not. The handshake, what does that have to do with anything in the role? But that's what we do. We base it on one simple criteria, and that determines the rest of the process. So the technology is there to create structures so that I can come into any interview and it's already there for me. All I have to do is have a conversation like this, ask the question, listen, take notes, mark the positive and negative indicators, score the question, boom. Now I've asked every candidate the same questions. I've listened for the same things. I've scored them in the same way. And now I can look at them equally. Again, it doesn't matter who they are. What matters is that they have the ability to do the job. Who they are comes in later. And that's where we get into helping companies build more diverse, you know, teams. Is again, if we're not worried at the front of the process, what somebody looks like, what their name is, et cetera, oh, that's icing on the cake. What we've done is got down to the core of, yes, this person can do this job, great, let's bring them in. And then you start to also build inclusivity in the company. And that's where people start to get really happy, because that's now we've hired somebody for their ability. It's a perfect match in that sense. Because we've been able to use technology to help the interviewers see that without letting their own biases get in the way of that.
Absolutely.
And that's where it becomes really important. Yeah.
We're going to talk about that a little bit more. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And he is amazing. He is incredible. You better not even think of making an excuse around this man, because he is not going for it. Mr. Robert B. Foster. Robert Foster finds fulfillment in helping others discover their calling in life and turn it into a thriving career. He also speaks regularly on the principles that have helped him build extraordinary resilience to weather the storms of life and come out victorious. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Good morning. You didn't call me a brat this time.
Because I was trying to be nice for a minute. You know what I mean? Robert, you know what I mean? You really want me to start today?
I'm scarred. I was bracing for it. I was like, I know she's not going to stay this nice.
I did. I said you can't make excuses around this man, because if you try, he is not going for it at all.
No, absolutely. So Robert Foster, I'm in Cranston, Rhode Island, another East Coaster. Mm-hmm. And so where all that stemmed from was mainly from my upbringing with my dad, just watching how he operated. There was just never anything that he couldn't do. Mm-hmm. So it was always by plan A, right? Plan A isn't gonna work, then plan B. Plan B don't work, then plan C. And he just constantly just found ways to make stuff happen. And he just instilled that into the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And life is so easy to get sidetracked by the obstacles, by, you know, people's biases or just whatever the obstacle is. But if people actually just block out the noise and focus on the task at hand, everything just gets easier and easier. And so mm-hmm. like everyone else here, we all help other people. And so I've just taken all of my experiences, because I wasn't sure what lane I wanted to go down, because I work with a lot of different demographics. And, you know, all the gurus say, you know, you gotta pick one and just step into that one. Mm-hmm. But as you know, I am a rebel. So
right.
And I'm going to figure out a way to create a brand where my messaging affects all of the groups that I want to work with. And then that's where Shut Up and Grind was born, because mm-hmm. that's global. Like, no matter where you are, what you look like, what gender you are, what language you speak, the grind exists. So if you have somewhere that you want to get to, I just help people block out the noise and focus on the task at hand.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you still doing personal training?
Yes.
I saw some videos or some photos the other day. You were working with someone and you were outside. And I was like a contest or something, and they had to go a certain feet. I'm not sure which picture it was, but the whole time they were going, your whole attitude was still like, you got to make it. You got to go. You got to have this challenge. So I thought it was great. Now, I just want to go to the flip side, Robert. Do you ever have people who start off working with you that are sensitive, you know, that maybe don't like that hardcore, shut up, grind approach? And how do you deal with those people?
Well, people know up front. So I let them know in the consultation period, like, if you show up, I expect your best. And now your best is going to be from where you start. Like, I don't expect people to come in and start on chapter 10. Like, you know, you're on chapter one, but we want to maximize everything, every inch of your current ability. And then we progress you from there. But people know up front.
Mm-hmm. So you don't care if they're sensitive, if they're whiny, if they don't want to go through the process. For you, it's just shut up and grind.
If you have a goal and you're paying me money, my job is to get you to your goal. My job is to not safeguard your feelings.
Okay. Well, I like that. I like that a lot. So how did you go from there to training, to speaking, and now you're a podcast host? How did you come to be a podcast host?
I always wanted to be a TV star as a kid. Like, that was my thing. Like, I belong on stage. I belong in front of people. I belong performing. That was my thing. And then somehow I spent 20 years as a restaurant manager. And so, nothing against the industry, but it just wasn't for me. Like, I knew I wanted to do more, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just took the things that I learned in the industry, because, you know, you have to give leadership meetings, sales meetings, training meetings. And I'll just took all of those principles and just took it to a bigger stage. Like, I don't want to be pinned into just that one industry. Same thing with fitness. Like, everybody thinks my podcast is all about fitness and it's about overall wellness, but like, I don't want to be known as just the fitness guy. And again, there's nothing wrong with the people who do that. But I want my message to be global.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Erwin, now we're speaking to Robert and he was talking about his message and his goal. One of the things that you spoke about is being in this kind of box and doing what people said you should do. How did you change that mindset?
Well, during the training, you work on yourself as well. Mm-hmm. And there were some mind shifts that really got to me. One of them was a quote from Napoleon Hill, whatever the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Mm-hmm. And that has been like my life motto ever since. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to look at people, see their luck, their success, and thought to myself, yeah, you know, that's not for me. You know, maybe they're luckier, they're just good, and I will never be able to get that. Mm-hmm. And after my mind shift, it's, you know, if they can do it, why shouldn't I be able to do that? Mm-hmm. No, we're not that different. Mm-hmm. And just having that mindset of looking for possibilities, looking for opportunities, and having this life purpose of making a positive impact, that helps a lot.
What was that moment for you when you had that shift? I mean, anything that you care to share? Because often other people learn from our journeys. And usually that shift is not something one day, 1 minute, 1 hour where we wake up and life is different. It's usually a process. So what was that shift like for you?
Well, like I mentioned too, one was my first training weekend actually. Mm-hmm. In the Sunday afternoon, we had done our first official hypnotherapy session. We were trained to do that. And we were with 5 students. And I was the only one that didn't do the exercise yet. So the trainer asked me, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to do it during the other meeting, which means we're done early today? Or do you want to do it right here? But it means that we will be here for another hour. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, you know, I want to do it here because I wanted to have his feedback on my session. And he said, okay, well, I have a little issue. You can do the session on me. Well, that was not exactly what I had in mind, you know, to do my first ever official hypnotherapy session on my trainer. But I looked at this demonstration. I wrote all the notes. I've shown my fellow students doing the session. So I had the whole script, the whole program already in my mind. So I did the session and it went perfectly. And after the session, the trainer said, yeah, I don't have many comments, you know, everything went well. There was a little part during the session that I speed it a little bit. I could have taken more time for that, but overall, I was very happy. And I got cold shivers all over my body. And it was the moment I realized, you know, this is what I was meant to do. You know, mm-hmm. this is how I can make a positive impact, how I can help others. And that was when my entrepreneurial journey started.
I like that. I like that. Have you gotten those cold shivers all over your body when you said, this is what I am meant to do?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The cold shivers, Erwin, it's cool to put it that way because I never thought about it in that way. Yeah, for me, it's more been events, like specific events that got me to this point and sort of in connecting the dots between those events to finally wake me up. That, you know, the cold shiver, I think, was just a true wake up point for me. So it actually started at the end of 2008. I was involved in a workplace shooting where friend of mine was shot and killed. Thank you. I appreciate that. It was just one of those, I don't know. I came out of that realizing that people don't have to go to work and fear for their lives. Like, why, how is that a thing? And, you know, so that really started me down this journey of helping organizations create a safe place for people to be themselves, to belong, to have their voice heard, and to feel safe. And so I kind of, you know, I took this journey and the wake up moment for me was working for somebody who all they cared about was the money, right? And they were just using the rest of us to fill up their bank account with money and they didn't care about us. And I, you know, I'd had enough experience to that point where the cold shiver for me was really just anger. I was like, look, I don't need you like questioning every decision that I make to help you make money. It just was a wake up call. And that's how we actually started the first iteration of our company was the three co-founders. We were all at that point. We're like, we're tired of working for somebody else who doesn't care about us, who didn't create a place where we could feel like we're always seen, valued, and heard. Mm-hmm. And so it was that. It was just that push and then connecting all the dots to say, this is how I can truly impact other people's lives in a positive way. And that's what we built. You know, this is the way that we believe we can do that. And then when you connect the dots with all the work that like you all are doing, for example, you start to get this holistic picture of how people can truly thrive and be happy. But it's a lot of different things, right? It's a bunch of parts and pieces. It's physical health, you know, Robert, it's diet and Salim, it's kind of mental health and mindset and what Erwin's doing. So it's a combination of all of these things. And I was, the cold shiver was just finally figuring out what my part in that was mm-hmm. to play.
Mm. Robert, when you hear UB talk and Erwin talk about their mission and that cold chill and get into that moment, what are your thoughts?
That at some point we all go through that. Like we all have that shift where you step into your power, or I mm-hmm. call it, you know, step into your greatness, well, whatever side of me it's on. You know, because like we all have that one thing that we wanted to do. Just like I said, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to be on TV. So this whole podcasting thing came out and I was like, that's perfect. Cause you know, when you're a TV star, the production company owns you.
Right.
So at least this way here, I'm in control of this. I'm in control of what shows I go on what guests come on to my show, how long it is, when it is, if I need to move it around or whatever. So I was able to step into what fuels me. And that's what they did as well. And as I said, we all do this to help other people.
Let me just ask
you a question.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I just wanted to throw this out to everybody. How do you all approach, you know, because there's the mindset, right? The individual mindset to get to this point of saying, look, I want to control my life now. But there's also like the systemic oppressions and inequalities and things that exist within a system that even if you have that mindset, it's preventing certain groups of people, particularly in this country, from achieving what they really want to achieve. How do you tackle that in what you all are doing?
Let's start with Salim. Salim, I would love to hear your response to that.
Well, you remember on one of your shows some months back when I was saying that I didn't want to be called Black, remember?
Yes, yes.
And I caught a lot of feedback from that, right? So
for a couple of shows,
yes. Yeah, I mean, it went on. It wasn't, at first, I'm not going to lie to you, UV. At first, it was a little bit emotional because I'm coming to the equation of how to better myself. And words carry a lot of power, mentally, physically, emotionally, you know, spiritually, they carry a lot of power. And when I started learning about certain so-called names that we give ourselves, the labels that we give ourselves, I caught a lot of feedback from it. So my mentality was, all right, no crying in baseball. I can feel this emotion there for a little bit, but I'm based on fact. I have the Constitution. I have the Declaration. I know how to study scholarship. I can go to the law dictionary and tell you that why Black is a status and this is why I don't want to say this. I can show you where court cases or different scenarios in life to where that does not work in a legal perspective. And when you're coming in with your perspective, it's shaking a core of someone that may not want to deal with that. They just don't want to hear that at that time. So the only thing that I had to do was, okay, it's not personal towards me. I'm that mirror showing them something that they don't want to see right now. And it takes a lot to get to that point within yourself because you have to take it as they're not talking to me because we're emotional creatures. So, you know, and they're going to put their own perspective, their own bias towards that word because they associate to that word. Now, if I was to say, I'm going to call myself a male, which is another word under attack, under a different label, under a different oppression system, or if you say masculinity, I'm speaking most of the time from a mathematic, scientific, or legal standpoint, all of which require no emotion. Because when I found Islam, I believe the word Islam, the acronym I, self, law, and master under mathematics and science. So I understand that, you know, and that's what gave me my chill moments a lot is when I started looking into the Constitution, not when I was cooking, not the plates that I was sending out, none of that. But all of that took that mind frame. So I understand what Robert said, when you got to take those things from the kitchen, because it takes a different person to operate in the kitchen. But when you're coming at people with a legal standpoint, like if you see in a law or something that was done in administration that people didn't find favorable, like Donald Trump or Bush or anybody like that, you get a lot of backlash and you have to stand on your square, so to say, and be like, look, I'm going to have to do this. This may not be for them right now. They may not understand it right now, but I can find a way to present it to them when they calm down out of that emotional state. Then I can show them where I'm coming from and we can have that conversation.
Did that answer your question, UB?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now, thank you for that perspective. It's a good, you know, that's our approach to kind of the bias conversation is very factual neuroscience based, right? Because you can't argue with that. It's, we all have it in our brains and, you know, it's part of being human but it's also level setting too, to your point, like, let's take the emotion out of this for a second. Let's level set. We all have this. No matter what we look like, whatever, we all have this. So yes. Yeah, thank you, Salim, that's great.
Robert, did you have a response to UB's question?
Yeah, like I'll piggyback on what Salim said, because I'm the same way. When people ask me what my nationality is, I say American. And then same thing, some people don't like that. I'm like, but you know, whites are from Europe originally, but so why can they be American? Like, why aren't they European American? Like, I was born here, I was raised here. Like, I'm just as American as anyone else. When you go to the Olympic Games, you're on Team USA.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You're on Team USA. So I don't see why there's anything wrong with saying that. And as far as the oppression part, in my opinion, and people don't have to agree with my opinion, oppression is a state of mind. So if you go to apply for a job and you don't get it, apply for another one. Don't cry about why you didn't get that one. You just keep going, you keep going. Like my name, how you were saying with your name, people would ask questions. My name is Robert Foster, right? It's not a very ethnic sounding name. And I speak articulately, so I have had phone conversation, phone interviews, and then I show up for the live interview and you can see the hesitation, like they weren't expecting to see me.
Right?
Like, I've had that happen. But again, instead of crying about it, it's like, this isn't the opportunity for me. Next, mm-hmm. next. And you keep going till you find your lane. So mm-hmm. that's why I say oppression is a state of mind. Like you choose to stay down.
Mm-hmm. Robert's getting mad. Don't calm down.
I know.
Okay. I gotta drink my water. Throat getting dry.
We wanted some excitement.
I know we did. Robert always brings
about to
it.
Say, you know I bring excitement.
I was like, oh, Robert's on the show today. This is gonna be a good show. Oh, and there's Helene. Okay, this is gonna be good. Erwin, what were your thoughts on the conversation and the question that you'd be asked?
Yeah. Well, I can say that as hypnotherapists, we make a difference between the subconscious mind and the conscious mind. And the subconscious mind always has a positive intention. It wants to keep you safe. It wants to protect you. It wants to take care of you. And what's the best way of achieving that is to keep yourself in your comfort zone. And the moment you want to step out of your comfort zone, it's unknown territory. You know, within your comfort zone, everything is more or less predictable. You know the outcome. But if you step out of it, the subconscious mind wants to pull you back a little bit because it's unknown. We don't know what the results will be. So people that are very comfortable in their own comfort zone, they don't take that step outwards and to develop themselves mm-hmm. until they find a true purpose or they are fed up with the status quo, so to speak. And then they're able to break out of that vicious circle they're in.
That's right.
Talking about ethnics, I have two adopted boys. They're from Haiti and they're both colored. And I still remember when my wife used to take them to the daycare. And then one day I was going to pick them up. And when I went in, the two ladies that were managing the boys, they started laughing. And I asked them, well, is it something I wear? And they said, no, we just thought that you would be a big black male. And I said, I'm sorry to disappoint you, ladies, but but it's all in the perception of the person.
Yes, absolutely. Now, UB, we got some responses for you, some answers to your question. But I want to ask you this. This is always my question. When I hear Robert and he spoke about oppression and being in your lane and that job is not for you, too often that's, it's a good thing. People say that. I tell people that all the time. If they go to a job interview, you didn't get it, it wasn't meant for you. I truly believe that. Now, however, on the other side, maybe that company is systematically making mm-hmm. biased decisions. And so, yes, it's not for that person to be able to go up against this company, but there is something that needs to be done. Do you see that, UB?
100%. I think, for too long, we've really put the onus on candidates to play this game, right? And essentially what that game is, well, I'm going to go connect with the recruiter from this company that I want to work for, or the hiring manager. And I'm going to be, basically we're saying, the candidate has to become friends with you so that they'll remember you positively over others in the process. Mm-hmm. It's kind of how that plays out. And so, our focus is we got to put the onus on the company, mm-hmm. right? The company needs to stop pushing out generic job descriptions that all look the same and expecting candidates to fight when in reality, it's the companies who need the talent. now more so than ever.
Right.
And so why can't the company take the time to really understand what it is they need in a role and then create a process to find that in candidates and put out a message that says, this is what we're looking for. This is what we're not looking for. Let's give candidates an opportunity to opt out of the process even before they get all the way into the third interview and realize that this isn't the place for me. Like, let's give everybody that opportunity up front. But companies have to do more of the work now to say, this is what we know we need. It's based on data. This is why people are happy in this role. So let's go find more people who have those shared characteristics. And we can look out beyond the normal, well, just because our CEO went to this school, we can only look at this school. Right. Why? Like, there's so much talent. And if COVID gave us anything, it was the fact that we can look literally anywhere in the world to hire somebody now. It's literally made companies' jobs easier to find more talent, but they need to put the work in. And so that's where, so to your point about, you know, building in kind of these oppressive systems within the process, there are absolutely things that, whether they were unconscious or conscious, were built in to only really look at a certain type of people for a role in that company. And that's what we got to start dismantling and breaking down and creating more inclusivity and equitability in that process. Mm-hmm. But I also agree with Robert. I think, you know, the mindset, it is a mindset, and Erwin as well. Like, there are things that a lot of us weren't taught, but we can go learn to help us overcome a lot of these obstacles. And we have to realize that, but it takes like a cold shiver moment, right? Or it takes something to get us to that point, but we can all do that. We can all learn and overcome.
Yes, absolutely. Now, again, Robert mentioned the systems. Saleem, whenever you're on the show, my favorite topic that you discuss, because I know we were having one show and people were like, well, the system is broken and the system was broken. And what was your response, Saleem?
Well, let me think, because
the system is doing what it was designed to do.
Yes, the system, it is. Yes. It works very, very well, and we just need to break the system. One of the things that I've seen perpetually is when you're looking at law, right? When you're looking at law, you're looking at a history as well. You're looking at things in a timeline. And a lot of people have asked, well, Saleem, how do we get here? Well, it started in 1492. So when we don't want to recognize that, when we don't want to recognize what happened, we had a bunch of capitalists looking for a profit when they came here, period. So they wrote a constitution, a commerce document for that profit. And through the years, they have made it so that a system has been created. A lot of people they cringe at different words or different labels. So if you say white privilege, somebody's like, oh my God, I'm not privileged, I'm poor. Well, no, look at that as like a golf handicap. You know, you're not gonna hit par every time, but look at where your barometer is set compared to somebody else so you can win this game. Or if you're using the baseball analogy and starting out on second base, it's totally different. But when you're looking at a system, you have to look at the integral parts of it. How does the system work? What can I do in this system? What can I do? Can I not do in this system? And does this system work best for me? If not, then I need to do something to create a better system. So when people talk about racism, they talk about racism in individual acts. No, racism is an experience that's part of a system. It is a systematic thing. So when you're talking about the jobs and interview questions, the hardships that come about that is because of the mind frame of the individual who's given those questions. And maybe the mind frame of those who are at the top is saying, hey, we don't want that here. You know, we don't want equal opportunity. We don't want this. We don't want diversity. We don't want that. But we want to seem this way. And you've seen a lot of companies having to do that as well. But a lot of people do not look at it as system. They look at it as individual. And that's the part of the system that is working very, very well. Remember, the devil tricked everyone to making sure that they knew that he didn't exist. You know, so we have to look at our systems in America the same exact way. Robert brought up a very great thing, is saying my nationality is American. And but the flack that you catch back from that, that's part of the system. Racism is part of that system. Privilege is part of that system. That's what keeps it working. Now, do we want to actually break this system down and do something else with it? Because when you hear certain words like Black Lives Matter, reparation, equality, denigration, you hear these things and a lot of people will start to trigger. But at the same time, we have to educate ourselves. And I think law is one of those things that should be taught in school. You should know what a nationality is. You should know what contract law is. You should know what trust law is. You should know what the Constitution actually means, so that when somebody is talking about gun rights and getting people emotionally in that, you'll know that I can go to the Second Amendment, and it's not necessarily saying that an individual has a gun right. You have natural inalienable rights. You know, one thing that I wish that our people here in America, not just by color or anything, I just wish that I would see it. You don't ask a government for rights. Governments are sworn to protect rights. And those rights are called inalienable or natural rights, the laws of nature, the laws of God. So when you have to ask a government for the right to do something, you're already in the wrong mind frame. You need to protect my right. When Martin Luther King did his last speech, what did he say? He went to the mountaintop and he saw the promised land and he may not get there, but he said that we need to demand our right because we have the right to protest for rights. Mm-hmm. It was the mind frame. So that's what we need to do here. It's that it still goes back to that mind frame, having that shivering moment to say, I'm responsible for what did I need to do. I'm responsible for myself. I'm responsible for what I need to put out, and I need to hold these people responsible as well. So mm-hmm. we need.
Robert, what are your thoughts on what Salim had to say?
I differ on some of what he said, which is fine. You know, it's like we don't have to agree on everything, but I think it depends on what you need the system for, because if you're working in a certain job or whatever, like the government's never dictated any aspect of my life. So never has. Like I was born in New York City. You know, my parents moved us up here when I was like 2.5. So I grew up in a very rural area, went to a predominant white school, grew up around whites my entire life. And I've ascended in everything I've done. Absolutely everything I've done. So have I encountered things? Yes, but I stripped it of its power years ago. So people can call me whatever they want to call me. It bounces right off. I just said, if I apply for a job and I don't get it, move on. And so I just think you're never going to topple the system. So you have to learn to circumnavigate it. And once you adopt that mindset, then it doesn't bother you. Like I said, I mean, if you're working in a corporate environment, that might be a little bit different. But as an independent, there is nothing stopping anyone, any gender, any color from achieving success. There's nothing out there.
I hear you, Robert. I hear you to a certain extent. The extent that I would to which I hear you is when you say the government has not affected any aspect of my life. The government affects every aspect of everyone's life, no matter who they are or what their color is, because that's why we have laws. That's what they create. So the laws are what determine what we have the ability to do and what we don't. So I hear what you're saying as far as a personal level, where you didn't have to go to the government for assistance or you didn't have to go to them to ask for anything, but why we have a body that governs us, so that we have this nation under God and under the laws that we create. UB, I would love to hear your thoughts on the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, this is an awesome conversation. it's got my mind spinning. Yeah, I hear what everybody's saying, because it is sort of a two-parter, and that's because I think Robert and Salim, your thoughts can go hand in hand. Yeah. You know, what I hear you're talking about is, because we do need people who really, you know, to the extreme are like, look, nothing's going to stop me. Nothing's going to stop me from achieving what I want to achieve. And nothing's going to stop me from trying to change the system. To Sharifa and Salim, what you're saying about the system, yeah, the system exists, right? There's laws, and there's certain, you know, boundaries within which we have to operate. But the way that system does get changed, because yeah, you know, the Constitution was written however many hundreds of years ago. And, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Salim, as far as like, should we update a constitution? But first, just to kind of finish my thought, you know, I think it takes both. It takes, to Salim's point, learning and understanding how the system works, because that's the only way we can then change it. But it also, to Robert's point, takes that grind, that grit, and that individuality to say, look, I'm going to do what I need to do. You know, I think of people like Elon Musk, right? I mean, he doesn't care what anybody thinks. He's doing his thing. His goal is, we're all going to Mars. And because I'm a total sci-fi geek, like, I appreciate that. And I want to be on the second ship to Mars. But, you know, the point is, we sort of need people like that who go to the extreme to do what they believe needs to be done to change the system. But there is, you know, for the majority of us, there is still the system at play that if we don't learn how to navigate it and change it, then it's always going to affect us positively, yeah, or negatively.
Yes. Now, Salim, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show, but I would love a brief response, if possible, to UB's question on, should we update the Constitution?
Yes and no. I think the first part of it is you still have to educate the people on what's in the actual Constitution. Mm-hmm. And they need to learn how law works. What is jurisprudence? Why do you read civics when you're studying the Constitution? But as far as change, yes. And it's easy to do, more than what you think. It's called the U.S. Code, which is the codified version of the Constitution. And that's where you can get certain statutes or certain things done on a way that can allow that change to come in play. But yes.
Thank you for that response. Yeah. Again, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show, and what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Erwin.
Yeah, I would like to add a little bit on the conversation we just had, because what I recognize and what I see with my clients as well, one of them is, are you a victim or a victor? You know, do you let the circumstances define you, or do you define your own circumstances and take mm-hmm. control of yourself? What Robert said, you know, that the system didn't influence him, so to speak. You know, the environment can influence you, but you decide yourself how it influences you. You know, you can a certain event, you can be sad, you can be angry, you can be glad, you can ignore it. You depend how it influences you. So if you want to take control of yourself and be your best self, then you have all the power within you to make that happen. And that's what I do with my clients as well. You know, I make them, I transform them in the person that will achieve their goals and beyond. And yeah, that's wonderful to do. You know, I want my next client to be the best success story ever. And the next one even better and better and better. And that's mm-hmm. how I'm trying to make a positive impact in the world. So
that is how you are showing up in the world and making that positive difference. Thank you, Erwin. Robert, shut up and grind.
You know, so outside of the fitness realm, so I have a free group on Facebook. It's called Speak About Yourself Out Loud. And what that is I help people understand themselves, take things that they've been through in their life and turn it into stories where you can influence and motivate and inspire other people. And I actually had a guest on my show a couple of weeks ago. By sharing her story of dealing with systemic lupus, she actually helped someone else not stopping them from killing themselves.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so like there's so much power that we have with our stories, and I just help people unpackage their experience and then turn it into inspirational stories.
I love it. I've never even heard of systematic lupus.
I hadn't either. That was the first time I heard it was on that episode.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Where can people find you, Robert?
RobertBFoster.com.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. UB, what do you have for us?
First of all, thank you for this opportunity. It's been just a truly incredible conversation. InterviewIA.com is where people can learn more about what we're trying to do. And really, we're looking to partner with companies, in particular, you know, people who are hiring a lot, who want to do it right, right? Like whose leadership have prioritized diversity and inclusion strategies and have prioritized finding the right talent. We can help them do that with technology, but also just with training and understanding of ourselves. And how we can treat each other better. Come find us on interviewia.com and join the journey. We can all be happy and positive and belong together.
Does your company have like any kind of certification type system? You know, because it would seem interesting to me for these businesses or corporations to say, you know, I am an interviewia certified company.
It's a great question. It's something we're exploring for sure. You know, we just launched but we're talking to a lot of organizations about even helping them create a training program. So every interviewer, anybody who does interviews, goes through, gets certified, boom, they're ready to go on the platform. So that's a great question. And it's definitely something that I think, you know, near future, we'll start to see manifesting itself.
Yes, I hope it's in the near future, definitely, because it's something that can help a company, especially when people are going to interview, to show, because at the end of every interview application, they always say we are, you know, an equal opportunity employer. But then when you go to the website and it shows the team, it's like, well, everybody looks the same. So, you know,
exactly. That's a great point. We need to start holding companies accountable. You know, I think it's the pressure should not all be on candidates. And so that's a great way to do that, because talent are looking for that. You know, they want to know if a company really cares about this stuff or if it's just performative.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. UB. Happy birthday, Celine.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You are so welcome. What do you want the people to know? Let the people know what you have going on. Don't forget your radio show.
Yeah, I'm that's to be announced. I'm still not having the utilization that I want yet.
Okay.
But you can find me at Salim Armia Bay on Facebook with the beautiful logo behind me. You can use that as a Gmail or mail.com to contact me. You can go to I got a lot of different sites. You can just start with Facebook. I'm very impressionable. Not very impressionable. I'm very personal. I could talk to anybody who IMs me or anything like that. I just like sharing the knowledge and where I can work and do anything for anybody. I do law. I do cooking. And we do music. We have a single dropping today from LOEE. So I'm just loving life. But anything I could possibly do, I'm there. Just check me out on Facebook. So
what's your single?
It's gonna be on my brother's page, Kep C with young Genesis. I don't even want to give it away. Just check Facebook. I'm gonna post the link. I mean, it's just gonna be beautiful. I mean, it's just beautiful. Kep C is one of the best producers in hip hop. If you have not heard him, you really need to check him out. And okay. I mean, like it's beautiful. It's just, yes, it's beautiful.
Okay, well, when it launches, put the comments in the link. I mean, put the link in the comments, because the people want to find it. So, this is amazing. This is amazing. It was a great show, great topic. And this is an example of how it all comes together. In every show, I find the commonalities. And this was definitely one of those shows, because I had no idea aside from the fact that I knew Salim was going to be here, but that we were going to go into race and all these topics. It's amazing. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. And it doesn't mean we still do not need your support, because we do. Please go ahead and share the show, whether you watched it 2 days from now, 2 months from now, or 8 years from now. I don't care. Go ahead and share the show. But I always ask that you don't just watch the show and you don't just share the show, that you support our guests. Our guests are here this morning to share their journey, their thoughts, their emotions. They were so real and authentic with you. So please support them. Their website link is in the Facebook post. And as always, please don't just visit their website. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at AskSharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.